And then that's how we go from here. We just start, we start talking. So without Michelle, I have nothing to set up. I usually do a bit at the top of the show where I'm like, oh, I'm talking and here we go. We're ready to rock.
Like I say,
And
yeah,
like
Jake.
that's where I'll cut the music in right there, probably. All right, and now the music's faded and we're in because there is no Michelle today. It's me, Jake. Hi, everybody. I know you probably weren't expecting this, but neither were we. As of this moment, we are waiting on Michelle Perez to get here to begin recording our episode. But you know what? This show isn't only about Michelle Perez, despite what she may have you believe, despite what she may tell you when we're not around. This show is about all of us. And with that said, I'm taking over. Not because I want to, but because I have to. And so, I'm going to cut through the normal Michelle BS of giving you guys a 20-minute, winding, labyrinthine monologue of truly unique proportions. And instead, I'm going to say, we've got a guest today. On the show, we've got a wonderful person who Eliza referenced to us, named Lyric Wilson. Eliza's known Lyric the longest out of both all three, me, Eliza, and Ruben. And with that in mind, I would like to kick it to her to further introduce Lyric, or, you know, say, hey, Lyric. And yeah, Eliza, take it away.
Thanks, Jake. I actually don't remember, Lyric, when we met, because I have had several concussions and I don't remember where I met most of my friends. Do you remember?
Pretty sure it was in 2008. I want to say that sounds about right.
That was about the time that I moved to the Bay Area from Seattle. So that sounds about right. And we worked together at a Berkeley institution known as the Bone Room.
For many years.
Which I was trying to describe to somebody the origins of the Bone Room. And I had forgotten the name of the reptile store that the Bone Room came from. So I think you probably have all this information fresher in your mind. If you could give a little background on the Bone Room, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, the Bone Room.
Do you know
was
what I'm talking
a
about?
Spinoff. I do know what you're talking about. So the owner of the Bone Room, Ron Cobble, also started the East Bay Vivarium, which is the largest reptile retailer on the West Coast. And once he started the Bone Room and was just having more fun, just selling dead things and fossils and bugs, he then sold the East Bay Vivarium to his partner Owen, who now, to this day, still owns the East Bay Vivarium and runs it.
Very cool. So that would be, like, to be clear, that's like
reptiles
a reptile-only pet
store,
basically?
Once in a while, they have, like, some betta fish, or they have quite a few arachnids and some scorpions, some vinegaroons.
Very cool. I bet a very fun place to visit, even if you're not
looking for
a pet.
Everyone who works there is very knowledgeable and just lovely to converse with if you're into reptiles.
Nice.
Yeah, if you go to the Bay Area, that's like one of the places that the locals will take you. That's sort of like a hidden tourist attraction because it's they just let you walk around in there as long as you're not an asshole and you can look at all sorts of incredible creatures.
That makes sense. There's like some aquariums in the International District in Seattle that are just very Blade Runner-esque that I've had friends take me to just for the scenery like that.
Yep.
So, or not aquariums, but fish stores.
The Bone Room was originally literally the Bone Room of the East Bay Vivarium because when you have rare critters that die, you don't want to just throw them in the garbage. It makes more sense to preserve them either as scientific specimens, or you can macerate them and save the skeletons, or you can even assemble the skeletons, articulate them, that kind of thing. So the Bone Room was originally a room off the vivarium and then split off into its own store when Ron sold it to Owen. So Lyric and I worked at the Bone Room itself after it had already moved over into Berkeley. And the Bone Room was I refer to it as sort of a natural history store. That's kind of the easiest way to cover everything. They had preserved insect specimens in drawers. They had fossils. They had human bones, skulls. They had articulated skeletons of creatures, true to the original word. We sold crickets to people who had pet reptiles and amphibians. There was a cricket box in the back.
Oh, wow.
We did taxidermy.
As you do.
One of the famous specimens that we were given was Tippi Hendren's German Shepherd, was being stored in a freezer chest in the back room the entire time I was working there. And the issue was that she had not gotten it to us soon enough to make it an easy taxidermy job, because many people don't know this about taxidermy, but you need to skin the creature very quickly, because otherwise decay sets in, and once there's even a little bit of decay, it's very difficult to skin something in one piece, and then it becomes very difficult to taxidermy it. So we had this not particularly fresh adult large German Shepherd dog in a chest freezer in the back of the bone room. And the whole time that I was there, nobody knew what to do with it. I think Ron had just like taken on the client because she was famous, and he, you know, was like, oh yeah, sure, we can do it. But I don't know if that dog ever got actually skinned and mounted. It might still be there. I don't know. There was a lot of weird stuff in storage in the bone room. The bone room itself had its own little tiny room within the bone room that had stuff in it specifically that we didn't know what to do with. I mean, we can get back to that. We can get back to that later. So no, the other thing like about the Bone Room and about Lyric, which is going to be particularly interesting to those of us who are either geriatric millennials or Gen X, is that Lyric and most of the staff of the Bone Room were in fact suicide girls.
This was a thing. Eliza, you and I are not millennials.
Yeah.
We are Orwellians, because we aren't born in 1984. We're Orwellians, not millennials. We do, because 84s are much weirder and more interesting than anyone else who was born in the 80s. We're Orwellians, not millennials.
Damn. You heard it here first, folks.
I don't know.
I'm learning today.
That's a little... I'll have to think about that and get back to you on that one. So Ron was a dirty old man, and he specifically hired goth girls. And if there were goth girls in the Bay Area or Los Angeles, most of them were suicide girls. It was only but for the grace of God that I was not a suicide girl. I don't know how I missed that. I don't think I got on it fast enough. I wasn't living like in the cities where Suicide Girls was happening while it was in its heyday.
You did a higher form of,
but almost everyone else who worked at the Bone Room, I guess. Yeah, I don't think I was doing stuff that was like quite slutty enough for Suicide Girls at that time. And by the time I did get to that level, it was already too late. So, but I mean, not that working for Suicide Girls was such a boon. That would be a funny episode, actually, was how that all went down.
I mean, if we can get a couple more people to talk about it, you know, it was an enterprise of note.
Yeah, Lyric, yeah, I know those people.
There were times where I'm like, I know too much. I've been behind the scenes at too many of the shows, and like I knew the guy who owned the site and spent a bunch of time hanging out at his house in Los Angeles, and I'm like, I know too much.
Yep. Yes. So, God, I don't even know where to start. I was the new girl at the Bone Room for quite a while because I didn't work there for very long. And
What I'm curious about. Like, you walk into the Bone Room, like, you're the new person. What's the vibe that you get?
Well, the boss was he was a real piece of shit, actually, and I don't feel bad about saying that at all, even though he's dead. The very first thing that he did was machinate a feud between myself and the other employees. And he told me after I had worked there for a few weeks that none of them liked me, and they had all told him that they didn't like me and didn't want to spend time with me, which wasn't true. It was wild the kind of shit that he did. It took me a while. I think it took everybody after they had started working there a little while to kind of figure out on their own like what a jackass he was. And it sucked because you were constantly like fighting the boss to run this really amazing business that had incredible stuff going for it. I mean, I loved working there. I did not mind mucking out the crickets, which was my job. So.
Sure. I can definitely relate to the situation of like a small business is loved by the community, but the person who runs it isn't necessarily the best person.
Right. That is exactly what was going on.
I mean, but I have to interject to also say that while he had quite a few failings, I mean, we're talking about a person who was very limited when it came to interacting with other human beings, but at the same time, like, was always very interested in, like, educating all of us. Like, anytime you needed to take time off, he would let you. He, you know, took everyone out to dinner. Like, he, you know, there was, and you could never get fired. Like, you would never fire anyone. Like, no one was, you would always have a job if you wanted one. So, you know, I think all of us know, like, some people who are extraordinarily spectrum, and while he was a very old man and extraordinarily limited and did some things that were less than savory, like, he did genuinely, I think, care about all of us.
I think he tried, but, I mean, he just wasn't, I don't know, I am extremely autistic and also very ill in a lot of different ways, and I don't treat people like that. And that's sort of like the bar that I'm at now. If you are as sick as I am and you're still an asshole, like you've managed to be more of an asshole than I am, you have fucked up in some way.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a decent bar. But yeah, you said you were the new girl for like quite a while there. Was that, did you just, I mean, is that just because no one else had started after you?
Yeah, it took a while for someone else to get hired because we had a full complement of employees for a while after I got hired, and it was a small shop, so you know, two or three of us working at the same time, it was pretty crowded in there. But I think I was.
Was it like? Is it like a museum setup? Were you guys kind of like tour guides?
I think de facto, yes, because the public would wander in and say the absolute most dumb shit stuff you have ever heard in your life. It was kind of like going to the zoo, where you will hear parents tell their children things that are absolutely not true about the animals that they are literally standing in front of the informational placket for. Like, they'll be standing in front of the thing about, you know,
just not reading
whales or something. It'll be like, whales are very large fish, Timmy. You know, it's, and that was the kind of shit that we got at the Bone Room. I think one of the dumbest things I ever heard personally, and one of the funnest things that I got to do in response, was a woman walked in with her very small son. He was probably six, and she's wandering around and looking at stuff and pointing them out, and they were enjoying themselves. And I was just behind the counter, and she says, "Hey, did you know that snakes don't have bones?" And you know, I kind of leaned on the counter just to see where this was going, and the kid was like, "Wow, really?" And of course, at that point, I had to interject because, you know, I have a problem. And I said, "Well, if you could actually just turn around and look behind you." She was standing directly in front of, with her back to, a fully articulated and mounted king cobra skeleton. There was no way you could mistake this skeleton for anything other than a snake.
You can't write that stuff. That's beautiful.
You know, reared up with its ribs flared and all that. And she got so fucking mad, like silently mad, fuming, you know?
You guys just made that. You guys just made that to trick me into thinking snakes have bones.
It was so weird. Who told her that? Like, I don't know. There were a lot of we had a lot of incidents like that.
One of my favorites was when people would come into the store to tell us that we were horrible people for selling dead items and human bones. Oh. Like, they would go out of their way, and they wouldn't do it right away. They'd browse first. And then they'd circle back to the desk and then make the eye contact and tell us very specifically that everything we were doing was despicable.
Or illegal.
Yes.
That was another one. Oh, yeah, like, it's not legal to sell the things. Yeah. Which was amazing because fish and game, I mean, this is something you don't know about until you actually get into the trade, but fish and game feds are unbelievable because they don't have anything better to do, so they run sting operations all the time, and we had to be trained when we started working there, like, how to find feds, because they will come to the store and try to get you. And we all had to be briefed on what to tell the public.
I mean,
who brought us dead things.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, so people would show up with, like,
I'm sure there actually are illegal things to track,
especially within the state of California.
Extremely
more fish and game laws than other states do. Like, it's much more strict about what you can buy and sell and even possess within the state of California. And like Eliza says, people would find things or have things in their personal collection and want to sell them to us because they didn't know. Like, we had people bring in whale baleen, large sea turtle shells, mountain lion skulls, local seals.
This feels
other marine.
Yeah, it feels like the kind of thing they would make a TBS show about. It would be like California Fish and Game, and you would follow agents around, and they would go to a place like the Bone Room.
I would love,
and
to
then we would see people on
show,
TV. Yeah,
and they would just version of the show.
That'd be incredible. Tracking down turtle shells and stuff.
Basically, anything you find dead on a beach, particularly if it's a mammal, don't fucking touch it. It's illegal. Do not pick up or let anyone know
you
that you have anything belonging
Eliza.
To a any raptor
species.
Okay,
she went offline.
Owl,
offline.
Falcon, hawk,
really?
All of those
just the
are
little...
illegal if they are.
She's talking right now.
Local to the area. What?
Hopefully, all of that got recorded. Never mind. There's a bit of a delay running on the stream. Everything audio wise is like being recorded fine, but Eliza on my end just cut out video briefly. If she was
we
talking
heard
through
Eliza
on your end, then we can just
fine.
keep going. No worries.
Oh, all of your
but yes.
Perfect.
Your
that's
cameras
fine.
All
It'll,
look
it should
like
be
shit.
All picked up
you,
then. Just keep going.
All of
up.
You are running at 3 FPS. So
I can see all of you.
I think we can just
here.
This is an Elijah and Jake problem.
It's definitely a weird video thing. So we can switch to audio.
Seattle
only if,
has really
if it
shitty internet.
Continues I don't
to be know
an issue, but I think
that.
Right now it sounds like it's very weird. The infrastructure is not as good as you'd think. Yeah,
I think it was melting recently.
That too.
Yeah.
All right. So no, we're good as far as I'm concerned. If this continues, I'll go into starting a new session.
Oh,
but that was just me being a little precautious. Excuse me.
Anyway, so yes, fish and game law can be extraordinarily strict. The Marine Mammals Act has no room for interpretation. You don't collect things that belong to marine mammals unless you have a very specific license. And there's a lot of other ones that we had to be aware of. Like, you can't pick up and own roadkill animals. And there's a lot of reasoning behind this because you cannot prove that you yourself did not kill this animal. It's the same with all birds that migrate within North America because of the 1918 Migratory Bird Act. Like, all birds, their pieces and parts, nest, eggshells are completely protected with some very small exceptions. But pretty much everything, you just don't touch it unless you're a licensed trapper.
Yeah.
Mm. Is that the kind of thing that, like, if when you get employed there, you have to start, do they have like a
we
learning
used to get
packet
lectures.
For you guys on that
and the
or something?
Stuff is sometimes when people come in and they want to sell us something and we're like, well, we can't buy it from you. They're like, you guys just want it? And then we'd play a game where we'd all draw straws to see who gets the free mountain lion skull to take.
Holy crap.
It was pretty
cute. That seems like the the way to do it.
Yeah, so people were always wrong about what was illegal. for example, it's perfectly legal to own and sell human remains. You can just do that. I don't know if laws have changed recently. I mean, at the time I was working there, it was right before the China Olympics or right after. So human remains, yeah. It was right before. So they changed a lot of laws about shipping human bones out of China around the Olympics because they were like cleaning up their public image.
Oh.
So human remains, like, well, bones in particular, have gotten harder and harder to get because they used to come out of China and yeah. India, and more recently those countries have really locked it down because it's not a good look, you know? But it does mean if you bought a human skull in 2008, it's worth a lot more now. So,
yeah. Well, China was the main exporter of human skulls. They were the main exporter, and they stopped in 2008. But the funny and everything that they were exporting was very obviously from exhumed cemeteries that were being exhumed for land development. Like, you know, they had a lot of signs on them. You know, we'd see like copper, like green stuff, like where jewelry would have been. I mean, we dug dirt out of people's noses and ears. But they were just exporting the skulls, which was very strange because post-cranial bones, like everything but the skull, all of those came from India. And they stopped in the 70s. So it's much harder to get like full skeletons than it is just to get, like, the skull market was much larger than fully articulated skeletons. It's also why most full skeletons you'll see are a little bit more petite and they have a very particular look. They're all out of India.
Yeah, the ones that you find in the United States are primarily from Oddfellows Lodges, which it was customary to have a human skeleton in the Oddfellows Lodges, like a mascot, sort of. My friend actually owns one of those guys, and he's probably a European guy. You can tell because he has an occipital calcification where his skull was constricted during its growth phase, constricted horizontally, which happens to white people a lot. It's just part of the genetics, and which is why white people often have tall, thin heads. The growth plates are constricted horizontally and they tend to grow up and forward and back. And so he had a lump of bone on the back of his skull, which is interesting because we live in an extremely racist country. The vast majority of trafficked human bones, obviously, are not going to be in origin. But this guy, right, yeah, this guy was from an Oddfellows Lodge and probably was a European just based on his skull formation. So, but I think she has papers for him. That's the important thing with human remains, is you want those papers telling you how old the remains are, where you got them, etc. That there was a lot of determination of paperwork about specimens, determining like whether or not we could sell something. That was one of the things that the back room was used for, is if we had a specimen and we didn't really have the paperwork for it, it went in the back room. Because it wasn't, like, I remember there was a zebra pelt that we had, and there are a lot of different subspecies of zebra, and they all have very slightly different stripe patterns. And there were two subspecies, I cannot remember the names because they all have, you know, interchangeable explorer names, who look very similar. They've got, you know, the usual black and white zebra stripes, and then they have like a thinner sort of caramel colored stripe. One of the subspecies is endangered, one of them isn't. But we didn't have paperwork to know which was which, and we couldn't ID it, so we couldn't sell it, and it was in the back room. And all of the specimens in the back room were like that. They were just like, we don't know if this is legal or not. Don't let anybody in the back room.
I have a couple of those specimens.
Anybody who might be fishing game.
In my personal collection, because we had a couple monkey paws, and we didn't know, and they were in jars and liquid, and we didn't know the species. So I used one of my gift certificates at the bone room. Yep. And so I just have them. Like, they're here in my room. I have both of them. So, yeah, no money changed hands.
Oh,
yeah,
like, that's pretty cool.
Coming home with me.
Right.
Yeah. It exists
perks.
Somewhere.
That's the job perk right there.
It was, yeah. We got a good discount. The back room had, there was a very small sort of mummified cat that we didn't know the species of. It wasn't a house cat. It was a wild cat of some kind. And it looked like a cub. And it was spotted. And it could have been like a clouded leopard. It could have been, you know, a very small and sort of shriveled up like raisin type of a larger predatory cat. We didn't know. We didn't know if it was legal. We didn't have paperwork for it. I don't even know where they got it. And so going into the back room was just like stacks and stacks of the stuff. Mysterious things. And I loved that about it. I mean, it was one of my favorite jobs because aside from like your personal conflict constantly with the boss, it was wonderful. Like just to go and look at things and be able to get as much information about them as was available, which is a luxury that you don't really get very much in most jobs, you know? So that was great. I miss that about it quite a bit. I think, Lyric, you started doing...
And did you all both...
I left like, before...
Eliza, did you leave first, or did Lyric leave first?
It's funny you should mention that.
Yeah, I worked there for quite a while after that. Like,
while I was there, I was hired sort of as the tech person. Right. So I was working there as the tech person, and when I arrived, I discovered that their entire office infrastructure was built on an extremely out-of-date copy of, if I remember correctly, Thunderbird, the email client from, like,
yes!
the 90s. And...
I remember Thunderbird, the Mozilla one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was a Mac email client, I think. And so I said, you have to migrate your office. You can't keep using this thing. It's going to just fall apart. And I spent months and months migrating all of the office files and systems over onto Google Office because, you know, it's not great, but it's all that they needed. And then by the time I was finally just fed up of dealing with Ron and quit, they were so lost and they were so lost, like trying to deal with this new tech that I had installed that they had to hire Lyric to start to like take over.
No,
where
actually,
I left off. I think
we
I went
worked
to
get there at the same time for a long time. And I'm not a technologically minded person. Like you, we had a lot of overlap, like when we worked there together.
Right, but you were, I think you were, like, not as much on the schedule or something, or I don't,
it
maybe
wasn't.
The tech section wasn't your job specifically
doing other stuff.
Until
and then
I left.
Started being, like, the Photoshop person, and I did all the posters for the lectures and the events,
right.
and they had so much great stuff. Like, we had Adam Savage do a talk there about a dodo skeleton he made, and a
oh,
bunch
nice.
Of other, some really fantastic scientific illustrators, and some really great talks about people who... This one guy who went to Papua New Guinea and discovered that these particular birds were poisonous because of what they ate. So it's just, there was so much great stuff going on. And it introduced me to my friend Bonnie. She does classroom safari. And she did a couple events at the Bone Room where she'd bring a bunch of her like big cats. And there'd be a giant African porcupine like running around the Bone Room and like fluffing its spines at everybody, and like she'd bring the serval in, and so I don't know. Aww. Like there's a lot of good connections there. Now me and Bonnie are really good friends, and I go up to Petaluma all the time and hang out with her and the cats and the reptiles, and so it made a lot of fun connections.
Yeah, it was definitely a great, I mean everybody went in there eventually. It was a very good sort of locus of all of those interests, which intersect a lot with the art scene in the Bay Area. It's one of the nice things about the Bay Area. It's not quite as common in other cities, is that the science and the art scenes really intersect a lot, which is nice. So yeah, I didn't.
Bay Area is so interesting. As somebody who never spent a lot of time there, but just likes stuff from it. I always, it has this reverence to me. Like, a lot of the music I like was made in the Bay Area. And, like, all the people in those bands, like, know each other and get involved in other stuff. And it's always just had this kind of, like, artistic reverence to me as someone who's only been there for maybe, like, 72 hours total.
Yeah, the Bone Room was very close to the Gilman, which is where most of those punk bands came
sure.
up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Gilbert. I even know that venue name, despite having not been there, just from reading tour itineraries and stuff.
Gilman, yeah, that was hallowed the area. Ground.
That's wild.
Unfortunately,
Ruben's struggling with Rue the cat a little bit.
He's giving me a time.
He's good lonely. Cat.
It's very interesting. Like, you guys for me are painting a picture of like, oh, it really is like that down there. People be knowing each other and like just sharing information and sharing access and stuff.
I mean, it is like that, but the part that we're not talking about is that there's no fucking transit. It's impossible to survive. The traffic is unbelievable.
A lot of cities.
The Berkeley liberals are the fucking worst. Yeah, it has serious problems. I think there's a good reason why both Lyric and I left.
I left because I couldn't afford to live there anymore.
I think I would prefer it to Seattle.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
It's one of the only places that gets compared monetarily up here too. It's just like the price to live is just up and up and up every year.
I like that the cat is waving at us.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Say hi, Rue. She's polite. We'll get a picture of Rue for the listeners at some point. This is good, yeah.
I just can't stop staring at the cat. It's the most distracting cat I think I've ever seen on the internet.
She's dancing.
She's wonderful.
Anyway, but yeah,
white undercoat.
It's a sad thing to have to leave the Bay because it had an amazing like connection of community and resources. Like, especially if you're an artist, there's a lot of maker spaces. Like, I wouldn't be the maker I am today if I hadn't met the people I had met in the Bay Area. Like, I wouldn't be who I am if I hadn't met Eliza and Melly, who Melisandinus Brown taught me how to be a leather worker. And Eliza taught me how to be more interesting and more femme. I would not be as femme as I am if Eliza hadn't been like, you know, you can actually do things with your hair, strumpet. Because before that I had no idea what I was doing, and she'd be like, you know, you can just do stuff. And she just pushed me around.
That's a good Eliza impression.
Some good times. And I really do miss living there, because Oakland is a fantastically honest city. Like, San Francisco can eat a bag of dicks, but Oakland is just spectacular. And, you know, you can get around on the bus system and bikes in Oakland, and there's just good people. But unfortunately, because of the larger tech situation in San Francisco, where everyone who lived in Silicon Valley, they created those buses so you didn't have to drive to work anymore. So they didn't have to live in Silicon Valley. So they all moved to San Francisco, which drove the prices up, and then everybody else moved to Oakland. And the biggest problem is that this large diaspora to Oakland, nothing has changed in Oakland. It has not gotten safer, cleaner. The streets aren't any better. It's just become worse, except no one can afford to live there. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, I think we've seen that situation play out in a couple, like,
it's really bad.
In tech-adjacent cities. And San Francisco is, like, the model. Yeah, like, they're, like, the first, and it feels like exactly what you said is getting copied up here.
Like, everyone who did live in Seattle is now moving to Tacoma and now can't afford to live in Tacoma?
Essentially, that's, like, I think the can't afford to live in Tacoma part is maybe, like, 5 years out. But the diaspora is we're in the middle of that right now for
it's
sure.
It's coming, yeah. Olympia is going to be next.
Yeah. I only live where I live because I'm living in an old ass building, but the level of like people I know that have slowly moved out to other spots around town just goes up every year. But yeah, it's like I learned about what you described in SF. Just from people up here comparing it, being like, oh, this is a lot like SF. I used to work down there. This is what's happening down there. This is what already happened down there. And so I've always looked at it as like this kind of like, what's my town going to be like in 5 years? Look down.
Yeah, there's a lot of exchange between the two cities too. People move back and forth between Portland, Seattle, San Francisco. Yeah, it's pretty common. The reason I wanted to have Lyric on is not only because of the Bone Room, but because we, both of us, have been like very heavy self-employed DIY people, and we have worked together a lot. Lyric is the one who taught me how to get independent work as an artist model, actually, which is something that we both did for a really long time.
No, I stopped about 3.5 years ago when I, a little bit before that. So about 4 years ago, like, I think I just reached a certain age where I was just, I couldn't do it anymore. I was just so bored sitting around doing nothing. And yes, getting paid to do nothing is fun, but it was fucking up my back, and I was just bored. Like, it was just, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't get up at, you know, 6 in the morning to go and then be exhausted and stand around naked for a bunch of people who didn't know how to draw. But I did do it for a really long time.
Yeah,
like,
that
it was my main
source
of income.
A lot of people have talked to me about, like, you can do it forever if you want to. I mean, there are people doing figure modeling who are 80. I mean, you don't ever have to stop. It's like being a dominatrix. Mm. You are employed for life,
yeah,
if you want to.
True.
Just keep.
You got to learn how
that.
To draw old people too.
They are mostly old people. Actually, Lyric and I used to get jobs because everyone was so tired of drawing old people. There were like a few young models, not very many. We were one of like, one and two of like three or four. There were not.
Well,
not
our teachers are
common,
like, please,
so would,
please.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how
the other
how,
thing we would get
like,
booked for
how many
is
young
we had
people
costumes.
Are very uncomfortable being naked in front of strangers. So it was just always much harder to get young models, especially young men models. Like, they were like the rarest, like,
yes,
flower in
impossible.
The garden that everybody wanted to get. So they were always like in big demand. I managed to get a yep. bunch of male friends of mine really good modeling yep. gigs because there weren't any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's you are always in demand. I think that the fear is that you're going to get a boner, and you will. That will happen.
Seems
at
reasonable.
Least once.
Seems like a reasonable fear.
Everyone has a story. Every male model has a story about the one time he got a boner, and every single person who has been to enough figure drawing classes has a story about the one time the male model got a boner. And it's just like, it just happens. There's nothing you can do about it. If
just keep drawing. Just keep drawing.
Yeah, it's just
keep drawing.
Oh,
I think
Ruben has a question.
How
so
to get a boner
if got
and
male models and they're getting boners, do any artists have like a preference for like maybe he'll get the boner this time and they save the genitals for last to hopefully sketch a boner?
Nobody
so
wants that.
Kind of
well,
nobody
wants that. No.
No one is avoiding drawing the genitals, hoping that the model will get a boner.
It could be your first time. You want to get the live boner in. Don't you want that muscle?
No,
you want the muscle memory. You want the expertise.
We only have 20 minutes to draw an entire human body, and there's so much to draw in terms of just structure. And the penis,
yeah,
the penis does not create structure within the body. Like, that's an extra at the most. If you have time, 20 minutes is not a long time when you're drawing.
It's only 20 minutes every time.
I'm just saying, like, you can't
rate?
Do an
yeah,
all day drawing, you know, where it's,
yeah,
or
it's
multiple
like
weeks where it, you know, it could be a 20-hour drawing.
Yeah, you gotta go to a separate boner drawing class for that, Ruben.
Follow up, has any of the male models that were your friends like gone in there and then like halfway through the session they realize their balls are like a weird position,
no.
They wanna like flip a ball over the other one? Cause some okay. I don't know.
The way this works is that you.
That's how his head works. It's fine. He's got a couple things he has to get off.
Why
has
it fucking started?
You only pose for 20 minutes.
I mean, that makes
at
sense
because
you
if
gotta.
You stay still.
The model would have to get up. You want to get up. Yeah, that's wild.
You can seriously injure yourself even staying still for 20 minutes. Yeah, so you have to move around. So it's not just staying still for a long period of time. Which, you know, that's probably a big part of it, but you also have to be able to remember exactly the pose that you were in and get back into it, physically, which is extremely difficult. So your memory, your body memory, your perioperception, all of that stuff has to be like dead on. So you become a really good model.
Well, like they're able on the ground, or they'll tape the chair so you know kind of where your hand was, where your foot was, where your butt was. And you have your spot on the wall or on the whomever that you locked your face on that you've been looking at for God knows how long.
Yep. You have to remember exactly the spot on the wall that you were looking at. Try not to pose like looking directly at somebody. That's not...
Unless you're like super into
that's awkward.
When Eliza used to hire me to model for her art school, I really liked focusing on her face to be like, draw my face, Eliza.
I did some pretty good drawings of you. Actually, I did a painting of you that was so good someone bought it. Like a third party that neither of us knew. He's like, yeah, that's a great painting. I'm going to buy it. I'm like, that's my friend Lyric.
Okay. And the other thing, when through the modeling, you get so many, like I'm sitting, from where I'm sitting, I can see six paintings of me that people just gave me. And now they're just everywhere. And it feels a little narcissistic to have so many paintings of myself. Most of them are on the floor because I feel weird having them on the wall.
You got to put them all in their own room or something so you can just have it all.
Yeah, I need to send...
It's not narcissistic, and I'll tell you why. Because we had to look... We had to look at tens of thousands of horrible drawings.
You're right.
To get to one decent picture of yourself, you have to look at thousands of terrible ones.
Yeah, because we're on video.
And every time somebody draws you looking like absolute dog shit.
No.
Yeah, see, that one's great.
Well, this is by Zhao Ming Wu. This is the teacher who is just, I mean, he's the man.
Oh, wow. So he's just styling.
I think he painted me once. That looks like...
Even on the webcam, that looks really good.
For those at home, I just showed a picture of my face. A painting of my... It was a portrait.
I got a screen capture of it. I can throw up.
There you go.
It's good. It's a good one. I'll email it to you.
I've had people talk to me like, how do you get comfortable with like being naked in front of people? I'm like, well, after you've seen an entire room full of first year art students draw you looking the ugliest, lumpiest, and oldest that you have ever looked in your life, you just get over it. Because they will draw you at every angle. They will draw you looking not like yourself at all. And it's just how they see you. And you just have to deal with it. And that's it. That's ego death instantaneously. You no longer give a shit what you look like. It is funhouse mirror.
I definitely have some favorites, especially when they would give me ginormous bosoms, which is amusing because I am famously flat chested.
Yep. Always men. Always men. Neither
of us.
You
can see like alternate versions of yourself, alternate takes on yourself.
There's always the kid. I was going to say,
there's always
the anime kid. He's in there.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
God, what else?
Oh, the interesting ones was when you would model for sculpture classes and you'd be like laying on a platform and every 5 minutes they'd spin you so that, because everyone needed like, and so they'd be making fully articulated sculptures of you, and it's the same where you're like, oh my goodness, like my torso is, they're making it very long, or they're making you very fat. And it's just, it's like Eliza says, it's complete ego death where you just start to, immediately you just don't care anymore. You're like, why, what? It doesn't matter. And also that situation when people think about, you know, why would you want to be naked in front of all of these people? What they don't understand is that nothing about this situation is sexual. Like they have such little time to draw you. They're not looking at your body and thinking, oh, she has a pooch belly, she has small tits, her labia is too huge. Like, nothing like that is happening. No one is sitting there whispering and making fun of you. They have so much to get down.
Right.
They don't have time. They don't have time to make fun of you. And also, who are they to make fun of you? They're just a bunch of childish art students, and you're the very proud, naked person being confident in front of them.
you are the one with all the power in the room. Like, they live or die on your say so. And I mean, you learn that very quickly. You're like, oh, okay, well, this is for me. Everybody cares about if I'm comfortable or not. Everyone's very grateful that I'm here, etc. Yeah, and I mean, I think it helps a lot also if you've been to figure drawing classes and done the drawing yourself, then you realize exactly, like, this is totally desexualized. I don't care what this person looks like. I am 100% interested just in the drawing.
Of the process.
Yeah, it's, I'm not, there is zero judgment whatsoever of this person's body or beyond, like, wow, I really like the way that gravity sort of made that curve or that line, or the way that the light is hitting this person's form in this way is so cool, or whatever, you know, or I really like the way that I captured the armpit hair with my charcoal pencil, you know, it gets down to that sort of granularity. I did have a male model when I was at a drawing class. I did have the male model hit on me afterwards, which was weird. He wasn't terrible about it, but it was a little odd. It's like, I've already seen you naked. There's no mystery there. I
mean, you got to have confidence, I suppose.
He wasn't bad looking. Like, there was nothing off-putting about it. It was just like, I don't know what you're trying to do.
It's an interesting time
here
to shoot your shot, yeah, right after you've been standing naked in front of someone.
I respect his confidence. That was there is definitely that. So yeah, I really like modeling. I would totally go back to it if I didn't have other stuff that paid better per hour. But it is a really good fallback job. You can do it anywhere. You can just call up, literally get on the phone with the local art college and be like, hey, who books your models? And they'll tell you. And then that's it. Call them at the beginning of the semester. They always need models. They will never have like a guy who's already set it up. They'll always be scrambling. And so it's really good work. I've tried to get a lot of people into it, and I feel like they don't believe me. I don't think they believe me that it really is that easy. Like, the hardest part is just showing up
and
getting it done. But it's
right.
It's a very small field. There are never enough models. You're always scrambling to book models.
Yeah. They always like to have new faces, new body types. Everybody has a favorite that they want to draw. My favorite personally is very Rubenesque men. Like, that is my favorite to have during a figure drawing. Like, because the ease in which you can create, like, the curves and the movement, like, you can basically do all your information in like five strokes, and then everything else is just filling in. But people who look like me and Eliza, we suck to fucking draw. We are the worst. We are bony and odd. And I don't know about Eliza, but like the semi-lunar notches on my ulnas in my arm are too short. So my elbows bend backwards and it's weird. It's weird to draw. It's not fun.
I was at a photo shoot one time and they had to Photoshop my elbows because they were so weird looking. That's the level that we're dealing with.
They said we'll do it in post.
Yeah, exactly.
Smooth these out.
It is literally that. Yeah, I mean, seriously, if there's anyone at home who's like, yep, I can stay still for long periods of time. If anyone has ever mistaken you for a mannequin in a club, which happens to me regularly, this may be the job for you. It paid well when I was doing it. It was like 25 an hour back in 2008 or whatever. It's indeed probably more now, depending on the region, but
that's good money.
Yeah. It was good. And if that's something that's easy for you to do, like, that's the important thing. For me, I will sit around completely motionless all day for free. So
yeah, I do it all the time. Yeah. If you get bored easy, maybe not the job, but if you're good at it, as they say,
if you can dissociate on command, look into art modeling. The other thing we used to get booked for all the time, both of us, was costume modeling, because illustrators and people who are going into like concept design want people who have weird clothes. So, you know, goth stuff, corsets, Ren Faire stuff, people who can just know how to drape. So we used to get booked for that, and props. There was one model, he was an older guy, he was probably in his 60s, and he would bring all of his sports equipment to every modeling session. So there would be this old naked guy just having a great time, like with his tennis racket, or he'd have like a volleyball, or he'd have his baseball bat. He had a golf club, yeah. And he just did all that was his thing. He did sports poses.
I think my favorite was
great. My
was
thing, the classical,
the Baron. He was like 75 or 80 years old. And he was like, he would always dress yes. up in these very elaborate period costumes. When he wasn't modeling, he'd talk to everyone and tell them that he was like secretly very wealthy, and he was going to dress up as Santa and give gifts to all the students. And the funny thing was, he actually lived in university housing and had this very tiny wife. And he spun these elaborate lies. And so the funny thing was about the older models was there was kind of this element of madness to them. One of them would constantly corner me and mm-hmm. want to tell me about his kayak journeys down the Amazon and riding horses across Russia. And there mm-hmm. was this very tall yep. woman who was older who would be riding her rollerblades down the streets of San Francisco at like 40 miles an hour. I don't know how she didn't die.
Those people always impress me. I see that in Seattle too. People just bombing down hills on either skates or roller skates or a skateboard. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's wild.
There was one guy who had a parrot.
Oh my goodness. What was his name? But it wasn't a parrot. It was a cockatoo. His name was Richard. He was super nice. He had a beard and he would always bring Chinook the cockatoo to all of his sessions. And when if you walked up to him and asked him about it, he didn't ask permission. He would just put the cockatoo on you. And this was not a small bird. This was huge. And it would just climb on your arm. God. And it was super sweet. And he'd walk around San Francisco with Chinook the cockatoo. It was spectacular.
That's awesome.
Yeah, these were the real San Francisco survival people, like Summer of Love refugees who had been there, you know. They were completely insane, all of them, but definitely fascinating to talk to. I had one guy really insistently give me his business card and then tell me that he had it printed on the only remaining old-timey printing press in the city. And sure enough, I looked closely at it, and it had like the imprint into the paper. It was like almost embossed because the engraving had been pressed so hard into the paper. He was right. It was a beautiful business card. But yeah, they are that type of person. You can kind of get a sense of like what San Francisco used to be like in the remains of that kind of thing. So I would like to talk to Lyric about her leather working, which is fascinating.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're getting into the back half. It'd be a good time for us to transition to how you got to doing that.
Oh, I'm like, well, I started going, I was going to school for fashion, which was not going very well because everyone else was just, I don't know, they were just a bunch of knobs and I wasn't doing the same thing and it wasn't working out. But there was another student there called Melisande Innes Brown, and she was doing her, like, while going to school, she was also on the side doing her own leather line called Antiseptic Fashion, where they did these hard leather corsets, which were like basically it was like armor, and when you were laced up in them, like, you could feel your ribs just being crushed into a totally different position. Like, that was real corset fetish. And so I kind of became like her apprentice, and we would do, like, this was back in the day where everyone was really connected through like Los Angeles and San Francisco and the fetish scene, and like the models and the photographers and the makeup artists and the hairstylists, like, everybody was friends and really talented, and no one had yet spun out of control, which happened much later. Like, a lot of those photographers and models and a lot of those people ended up having terrible problems, and it's very sad how it all deteriorated. But, you know, we were doing all these
ended up in the steam.
We were doing all these elaborate shoots and these projects, and through working with her, I just became just very, very comfortable with leather. And then a friend offered me a job at Mistress Leather, which is a gay fetish leather company in San Francisco. And I still work with them to this day because it's a really good job to have that gives you health insurance. And I'm the only employee that works as a satellite employee because I'm the only one who makes the GIMP hoods. So they let me make the GIMP hoods from Los Angeles. And I can just, I tried to quit a couple times. They're like, no, even though you're moving, can you just still make the stuff and ship it to us? And now after the pandemic, they're, I think they really wish they had more employees like me because I was the only one working through all of 2020 because everyone else couldn't
That's job security.
But also I have my own brand, Xenolog.
So why are you the – wait, I want to stop here. Why are you the best at GIMP hoods? What makes you the best?
So the simplest one is 144 steps, and I really like, you know, elaborate, like, you know, coloring graph paper and very aspy things, which are my cup of tea. So just the fact that it has so many, like, step by step by step, just the easiest one. And also, because it's so complicated, it's really hard. It's really hard to keep employees who don't, like, move on to other things, but I've just stayed. And I'm the only one who remains with all of the information. So even if they wanted to fire me, they can't. Because I'm the only one who knows how to make them.
Job security.
Job security.
Yeah, but I also,
GIMP hood job security.
And I also have my own brands, you know,
we love to hear
which
it.
I've been doing for a very long time, which Eliza was very instrumental in the founding of, like, you know, being, you know, kind of a muse.
But...
And the first photo shoot of all this stuff was at Eliza's loft. And there's been a couple of times where Eliza's been like, you know, you
That's
should really
cool
make this.
About.
And she'll send me like a tiny sketch. And I'm like, yeah, that can be a thing. So yeah, it's just been leather pretty much ever since for like the last, since like 2008, 2007, something like that. Ages.
And was that like a learning, like, you said when you, I think you said briefly earlier, you didn't have prior experience. So what was the like learning part of it like? Did you have other stuff that you had done in the past that kind of helped learn, helped you accelerate
like,
faster or something?
Being the kind of person, like throughout my life, I've taken every kind of different art class you could imagine. Everything from pottery to sewing to transportation design. Like I've done it all. And so when you've kind of because when I was in high school, my father was a teacher at the Art Center, which is a college down here in Los Angeles. It's very famous in the world for, it's very prestigious. And so when I was in high school, I took every class they offered to people of my age group. So very young, I kind of like had a brain that was very easy to kind of like adapt and mold and see things in a different way. So whenever I kind of attack a new type of making, it's easy and fun for me to kind of make it my own. So leather, I was able to connect with it adapted to me very easily because it's less like sewing fabric and more like complicated origami.
Okay. No, that's really cool. I have someone who's like, never worked with leather, but you know, I have your looking at like just some of the products you have on your Etsy store and just getting from zero to complete on some of this stuff, I could see what you mean about minute steps, it feels like, because of like all the segmentation in leather sometimes. But yeah, that's just really cool. Is it something that you kind of felt like, I mean, I don't know, like as someone who's done all those different artistic endeavors, when you started working with leather, did it feel like, oh, this one really clicks with me? Or is it just kind of something that's been a good
probably
gig for
a little
you for
bit
a while?
Of both? Like it felt, you know, it's hard in the hands and hard in the wrist, but it speaks a certain language. Like when you work with fabric is always trying to kind of work against you. And with leather, you're just kind of forcing it. Like you're punching it in the face and you're making it do what you want. Like, and there's just, I feel like if you know what you're doing, it's really hard to screw it up. Because you can make anything you want.
Okay.
Like it's so versatile. You can make hard armor or you can make really tight fitting, drapey, interesting outfits. There's so much you can do where a lot of other materials are very, very limited. Like you can only do specific things with silk. You can only do certain things with latex, but with leather, you can make anything you want. You can laser cut it into lace. You can make really crazy hats. You can do lingerie. Like, I don't know. You could probably, you I mean, I swim in all my accessories and ruin them, so you can take them in the pool. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. That's funny. When you started, did you have stuff that you were like, when you started your own, your own company, Xenolux, did you, what was like the first stuff you were making?
I hear Eliza's voice.
Oh, Eliza, hello.
I have been talking. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, we didn't hear anything you said.
Yeah. Shucks.
I feel like I am getting phased out a lot because there have been several times where I've been saying stuff and nobody has picked up
on
it.
That might still come. Yeah, that might come through in the audio. Yeah. I would definitely keep the video off for now because your audio is totally good right
now. And I can hear them, but there's been a consistent lag on your side for quite a while.
Yeah, it's really bad over here. I don't really know.
But you sound fine now.
Yeah, audio's definitely coming through just fine now. I think it might just be a video thing and like a bandwidth thing. I don't know. I wish I knew more about actual video streaming because it's very esoteric to me. But yeah, I think everyone's on the same, roughly on the same timer right now. Eliza, what did you say while we were talking about leather?
I was going to say that some of the most high-end designers in the game will soak their leather to give it a washed look, because it turns into a different kind of material if you get it wet. Rick Owens actually is famous for treating his leather, like throwing it through a washing machine, and it really shows. It gives you that sort of worn-in look, so I think that's a completely valid way to treat your leather.
Although, unfortunately, I think Rick Owen washed his head, which is why all of his lines recently look like someone is trying to wrapping a sleeping bag across themselves and calling it fashion.
Dude, did you see there is a Rick Owens x Birkenstock collab
for this summer? We need to buy them and do some sort of burlesque shoot. I will fly to Seattle for this. We'll call it
Birkenstock. You can kind of see like the house that I live in.
Eliza's log cabin.
I have enough Rick pieces that we could do it. I've got, and of course, all of my clothes fit Lyric. That's the other reason that we're best friends, is because we both. It's not a log cabin. It's a Minecraft house. I swear to God, it is just 100%.
It is
sunken ship lumber.
It's a Minecraft basement.
These are not bricks. They're cobblestones from the streets of downtown Seattle that the architect pulled up. It's just unbelievable. So, yes, we have so much room. You should come and stay. And you haven't met my dog yet. You're going to love him. He's the best. What was I saying? Yes, I have enough Rick Owens that we can put together a shoot. No problem.
We both have, like, while we're autistic in different ways, we don't feel the need to talk to each other constantly to maintain our friendship. Like, me and Eliza won't talk for a year, but no. I still feel the same way about our friendship, and I'll, you know, text her on her birthday, but, like, we don't feel the need to, like, constantly talk to each other. Like, nothing changes because we don't speak.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to reply to that birthday text,
but I know that
that's respect.
That I'm thinking about you, and I'm sure you appreciate it.
Right. There's a very small pool of hot girl autists in the world. As designated in that episode of Deep Space Nine where Julian meets all of the other autistic genetically, right? It has all the different kinds of like genetically designed autistic super geniuses who all live in the room together.
Back a couple of times, but yeah, there's the one who's like overtly sexual and hot.
Because they escape.
Oh,
yep. She is the one on screen representation of the hot girl autist trope, and so that's every time we find each other in the wild, we immediately become very good friends. And because we're both shaped roughly like Gollum, we fit each other's clothes. So we like immediately doubled our wardrobe. which was very useful.
That's just win-win.
It is. It really is. It's also a very good reason to date short men, because same thing, like you can just swap clothes with them.
Yeah, take Eli's jackets.
I did. I do.
Leave his ass in the cold.
He wears my jackets for his Mech Warrior streams.
Oh, that's right. He told me that. Yeah. That's fucking hilarious.
God, what else? I need to get you to make me a dog harness, actually. Speaking of the dog.
Ooh.
That's the project that I should be working on.
Measurements and like a little drawing or something for that cute little dog. Yes, I know.
He's not little. He's 90 pounds.
I call everything little. You know how it is. That's a cute little elephant.
He thinks he's little.
He does think he's little. We took him to an outdoor party this weekend because Simon Berman, my business manager and friend, got a new puppy. And this was a 10-week-old dachshund, so she is tiny, tiny, tiny. And Church Grimm was very polite and did his very best, but this puppy was so terrified that she just screamed at him the whole time.
Are you living the Disney movie, The Ugly Dachshund? It's this old Disney movie I watched a lot when I was a kid. So this family has these dachshunds, and the dachshund has babies. And then while at the vet, one of these Great Dane puppies is pushed away from his mother, and the dad feels bad, so he like puts the Great Dane puppy with the dachshund, and it like grows up thinking it's a dachshund, and it basically just starts destroying their house, like trying to crawl through smaller areas and just leaps on the wife. And it's the same thing where the big dog thinks it's little and wants to hang out with the little dogs, and they just don't get it. They're like, no, no.
This does sound vaguely familiar from, like, now that you're saying it, although I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a 60s live-action Disney flick.
Yeah, it's live-action. It's for people who really like The Horse and the Gray Flannel Suit. Like, it's that era of fabulous Disney animal movie that our mothers probably loved.
Weird. Huh. Yeah, he has some problems. Actually, someone referred to him as a special needs dog the other day. Which is like... all right. But yeah, he was taken away from his mom when he was very little, when he was about 2 weeks. So he missed that crucial period of development where the mom dog just beats the crap out of the puppies every time they misbehave. So he still has some dog manners issues to work out. But he was actually very good at the party. I don't think he was particularly pushy with the other dogs, but I think it was just too much. She had had the little dog had had a party all day with lots of people to see the new princess, and I think this monster coming into her backyard and getting boogers all over her was just too much. So it was a shame. All the humans love Church Grimm, but other dogs, not so much.
Oh yeah, we tried to introduce Church Grimm to an older dog I was dog sitting, who's also a lab mix, not the same type of lab mix, and he was having none of Church Grimm's joyfulness. No. He was very much like, oh, this young whippersnapper, this dumb idiot kid. It was very silly. They got along at the end. They were fine.
We figured it out, but yeah, it was a process. And Charlie Brown, the older gentleman, he did his best.
Charlie Brown's immaculate.
He's
a great
dog.
Big shout outs to Charlie Brown and CJ, his owner.
He was a great dog. I'm glad I got to meet him.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, Church Grimm needs a harness. He needs a service dog harness that doesn't look like shit and also doesn't look like I'm some guy who got a cane corso and then chopped its ears off, you know? Because that's the only kind of dog harness you can get.
Are a little too leather daddy for me. I'm like, why are you putting a leather daddy harness on your dog? I feel like sending the wrong messages.
I've seen those, yeah.
Like, I don't...
Grimm is so... yeah, he's so big, actually, that I did put a leather daddy harness on him to start with because I couldn't find anything else that fit him. But yeah, no, I need just, like, something utilitarian that also doesn't look like shit. But yeah, it doesn't need fucking spikes on it and, like, a
Roman
legion
insignia. Like, a
lot
of hardware and O-rings and... ugh. No. We can have some aesthetics here.
Right.
It doesn't have to all be about function.
Right. Like it should have snaps on the back to attach different kinds of accessory things like shark fins or stegosaurus fins, wings.
Oh my god. If yeah. I made one of these for you, that's probably all I would end up making for like the next 3 years of my life. Because I would be like, well, I need a dog harness that I can snap bat wings onto.
That might not be a bad product.
I told you, I think I told you this months ago, if you started making dog stuff, I mean, it would be hard to make anything else at that point because people, it's like when you start doing pet portraits, good luck if you ever want to paint anything again.
Our friend Melly did that for a while. She was making clothes for sphinx cats and she would,
Melly is a sphinx cat breeder.
You need to note on that. But she was making clothes for them and she was insanely successful to the point where she just couldn't handle it anymore because it was just too much work. She gave the business away.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you find a market that you're the only one that is somehow
untapped.
Well,
it's like at the beginning of the pandemic, I made a few leather masks for fun. And then all my friends were like, well, I need one. And then one thing led to another. And I had made 100 individual leather masks. Because people just had to have these one-of-a-kind things. And now, not so much anymore, because everyone's just like all about the comfort, not about the style, and hardly anybody's wearing a mask anymore, even though Delta variant is nigh.
Mm.
God.
I'm still wearing that mask, I'll tell you that much. But yeah, that seems to be, I mean, I'm just on your Etsy shop right now. Has that been probably your biggest thing over the last year?
I sold the masks to people I knew. It was a very small thing. Like the ones that I have up now are ones that I had left over from that creative, but I haven't made one in a while. Just because I feel that creativity has run its course and now I'm trying to think of the next thing, which for a while has been making exact replica pillows of animal skulls.
I was gonna ask about that. Yeah, that is up on your store. Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
Because I have a bear skull that's half of it smashed off, but I got it at a flea market. This guy, so you can't buy and sell bear material within the state of California. And I was at a flea market and I'm looking at it. I'm like, this is a bear, but I didn't say it. I'm like, what skull is this? And the guy's like, it's a sheep. And I'm like, And how much do you want for it? And he's like, $25. Wow. And I'm like, sold. And that's how I got the bear skull.
Anyway,
I made a pattern from it and they made it an exact replica of the size, like a tiny bear skull pillow. And then I just blew the pattern up and now I have all of these giant bear skull pillows all over my bed. I'm really bad at selling things. I just like to make stuff. What I really need is for someone to take Xenolux away from me and just be in charge of Xenolux and just use me as their little workhorse and be like, Lyric, just create and we are going to decide how much money you get. And I'm like, go ahead. So internet, if you would like to take over Xenolux and be in charge of me, I would very much welcome that.
Get a fulfillment
there
person. I pay Simon for that. I just give him 10% of everything that I make.
Can that person be you and you can just take 15% of everything?
No. No. The reason that I hired someone else to do it is if you rely on me to ship stuff to people, they will not get it.
Yeah, but if you were in charge, then we'd get to talk and hang out so much more and it'd be awesome. And then maybe I could convince you to
We just determined that we are doing very well, not talking or hanging out ever.
Run away with me and live with me in the mountains. It's true. I want to move to Grass Valley or Bishop or something. Something along the 395, near those old bristlecone pines.
No, I don't want to leave the United States. Are you kidding me?
I'm getting the hell
out of here.
Are you?
Yes, I am. I'm going to fucking Europe.
You better get some water.
It is.
Are you?
Time will tell.
I remember.
I've been there already. It's very fucking easy. All you have to do is overstay your visa. They will not throw you out. It is the easiest fucking thing in the world. Yeah, Berlin rocks. I'm learning German right now. It's also very easy.
Yeah, it's practically English. You just got to mess up your words a little bit.
Basically fucked up English. The worst thing about them are the fucking gendered nouns and the Das D, Dare, etc. That's god awful. Apparently it's so bad even a lot of native German speakers fuck it up, so I'm not super concerned about it, but everyone speaks English anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
A lot of different languages have very specific gendered nouns. Like Hebrew does that really hard.
Yeah. I'm not into it. Don't like it. It's one of the things about English that is very good.
Yeah, at the end of the day, English is a clusterfuck, but I think it's actually like a clusterfuck that's worked out pretty well for itself. Like, you could say anything you want in this language in a really weird way.
It has a lot of good points. It really does. I appreciate it a lot for what it does for us. I think my favorite thing about German is that it is incredibly fucking literal. For example, the word for cotton is Baumwolle, which just means tree wool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I wish we called shirts tree wool here.
Yeah. The word for animal is Tier, and the word for pet is house Tier. House animal. An animal who lives in your house. Easy. So
feels
easy.
Like a language for children.
My mind is getting blown.
Yes, it is. To speak German at like a basic restaurant shouting in a club level where you can be understood, it is very fucking easy.
It's just baby talk.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of
stuff. I have a house animal.
Yeah. Ich habe ein Haustier. That's it. Yeah. The other nice thing about it is that, God, what was I going to say? I can't remember. I've been learning a lot of German. It does get much more difficult farther along, but the basic stuff is great. But all those Germans speak English. Like most Germans, especially the ones in the West, of course, anyone under the age of like 45, they're going to speak English.
They all have to learn it anyway.
Most Europeans do.
For sure.
I mean, yeah, if you're under a certain age, you probably know English, mostly just so you can talk to other Europeans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
It's the lingua franca for sure. For sure.
I never thought about it like that, but it's really funny. Like, you're someone in, like, Spain, and you're like, mm-hmm. I gotta meet these people in Italy. Well, that's maybe a terrible example, because it's pretty close to the linguistically.
Yeah, like, if you're an Italian techno fan, and you want to go to Machine
Access,
Fest. Yeah.
Yeah, with all that train infrastructure, it's like, oh, I literally can be somewhere else where no one speaks my language in, like, let's say 2 hours or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. That's barely in America. Like,
dude,
that isn't a thing.
They have no idea how big the United States is. They
it's ridiculous.
They think that we don't travel because they don't understand that the United States is larger than Europe, you know?
Yeah. Like, it literally takes longer to traverse California than like everywhere in Europe.
France. I love overlaying maps of Texas on top of European nations. Texas is
like,
bigger than France.
You can put all,
you know?
All
and then
of
I
the British Isles.
I show
Texas
Europeans this.
California. My family lives in England. I don't know if you were.
Yes.
Yeah. Motherfuckers drive across like multiple nations on their way to work.
They
in
do.
California.
They do. Like, they're like, well, it's the weekend. I guess we will pop down to Rome to go to the techno festival, you know. And they do that, and they
this
come back
the
in time for
true.
Work, like on Sunday night. It's
crazy.
It's ridiculous. If you spend enough time over there, like if you take leisurely times, so you're there for like 3 months or whatever, and just sort of live under those conditions, you get incredibly resentful and jealous of what they have, because they just walk around not expecting to be shot, not expecting to be bankrupted by a sudden medical expense. They all have extra money to like go clubbing. It's so weird. Like, the food is cheaper, clothes are cheaper, rent is cheaper, apartments
the
have
infrastructure is just like existent.
You can get on a train and go places. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, the trains run until 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's
because
true.
People need to get home from clubs. Yeah. If I was go-go dancing, which was one of my jobs in San Francisco, and I needed to get back to Oakland after the bars closed, I had two options. I could either drive to San Francisco and then back from San Francisco, which was not only dangerous but expensive. Or I could take what was colloquially referred to as the crack bus, which was the only bus that would cross the bridge.
That.
Yep. the 80, that was the crack bus. If you wanted to go back to Oakland, that was your only choice. Because the BART train did not fucking run. It stopped running at like,
yeah,
I don't know, 11 or some
early.
Ridiculous time.
Like, fucking there BART. Was a moment Piece in Sweden where I was very glad that the train, I caught the last train, but it was still at like 2 in the morning and I made it back to where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But still, you don't have that option in California, unfortunately. But most of us drive.
No, you just, or the West Coast at all. Like, I was in New York City for a couple weeks, and they complain about the subway constantly. And like, I get it; they should complain about it.
Did
and
it?
The subway is
it
just,
did just flood.
It is
well,
just fall. It's falling. It's falling
it.
Apart.
So, yeah.
It's falling to pieces.
Yeah,
but it's still a fucking subway. And it was like every time I took the subway anywhere, even though I was 40
oh,
minutes
incredible.
Late, you know, and it smelled like no, mildew, and someone yeah. had taken a dump. Next to me on the seat, I was just like, this is amazing. I'm having a great time. We're on a train, guys. Infrastructure. Because they don't know. They don't know how dire it is on the West Coast. There's no transit.
Oh my God, yeah. When you get on a Link light rail out here, if you've been in New York, it's laugh. You're like, why does this even exist?
It's bullshit.
Like, where's this supposed to
or
take
been
me?
On, like, the
does
London
this actually work?
Which
like,
goes everywhere.
Yeah. New York, London, Tokyo, France. Those are the cities where just like trains will get you anywhere in the town, and
yeah.
it's ridiculously cool.
Yeah, I was in Tokyo for 3 days covering the Tokyo Games Conference, and I just hopped on a train in. Oh. I think I was in Shibuya.
Yep,
and,
all the maps are color coded. They have English words printed on them.
Stop to help you.
Super easy.
Yep.
Very friendly.
They absolutely
yeah,
will.
Absolutely.
Oh, I hate it here. It's
I
the
mean,
fucking worst.
I hate some things, but I do love a lot, especially about, you know, the desert of California and Nevada. I'm thinking about, like, me and one of my partners are thinking about maybe trying to think of getting some land, like, on the border so we can kind of be in the desert and, like, build some shit from scratch. And kind of.
You should get
yeah.
some land. I mean, that
it's not a bad idea.
Don't get anything on a
yeah,
coast in your goal.
I'm like,
it's
up high,
it's
good, better access, better possibility for snowmelt, and it's got to be near water because in about 15 years, this is all any of us are going to be talking about. You know, the real estate yeah. in Detroit is going to fucking skyrocket because so much water there.
Yep.
Yeah. I was talking with some friends the other day about how, like, initially, at some point, someone was like, oh, the Pacific Northwest is a great place to be for all this. It was like, no, the Midwest, yeah. Michigan,
you're all
that's
going to
be,
go
like,
to Detroit.
The spot.
It's going to be just like they said in that movie, Only Lovers Left Alive. Like, Detroit will rise again because there's so much water.
Oh. You know, I should watch that. I do love me some Jim Jarmusch.
That movie has the best
I have not
soundtrack
seen that.
Of any film I've ever heard. Very sexy, very brilliant. Also, what is this show usually about? I feel like all of us, it just kind of seems like we're just talking, like we're at a club.
That's a great question. This show is actually centered on people who are more or less self-employed
oh.
through any means, honestly. So people such as yourself doing independent leather working.
Yeah.
Our host, Michelle, is a freelance writer who's been published as a comic book writer.
Where the fuck and is
just kind of been working
she's
on that.
She's doing some independent work.
That's
going to
be
doing.
A. She honestly has like three jobs
do.
Right now.
She
so
does. I'm not mad
probably,
at her. I am not
yeah.
mad at her.
No, it's very likely she messed up
because
her schedule, and that's
fine.
You can
exist in
like,
this world,
it's whatever.
Right now, because of the way that things kind of are, it's a little bit trickier to be. Like, 5 years ago, this was great. Like, we could do all these side jobs and have housing and food, and it would be fine. And then things kind of exploded in this very horrible way where people who make things that don't exist, like apps and games, like, these are not real things and will not stand the test of time. And, you know, throw your computer in the lake and it doesn't exist anymore. But those of us who make real things, it's becoming much harder for us to make a living, even though we are creating the world around you. Like, they shoved all of us out of San Francisco, and they shoved us out of Oakland. And we're trying our best. But I mean, you know, I don't really know what it is I'm supposed to turn to now as someone who has just been self-employed for so long. Like, I am not the type of person who wants to go on Instagram and sell myself in this really uncomfortable way and be like, I mean, if someone was doing that for me, but still, I feel like the work should speak for itself. And Etsy, as a platform, has degraded over the years. It's not what it was.
Yep.
I've heard a little bit about
like,
that.
The amount of orders.
Yeah, they're letting, like, there's fucking Chinese dropshippers on there now. It's really
their algorithm
and,
like, how
that's
people
sloppy.
Are searching. Yeah. Like, it's just not as good. And I mean, it'd be great if I had my own little website, but still, then you have to sell yourself. And I'm an artist. Like, that's not what I want to do. Like, I would love to hire some young high school teen to just be in charge of my Instagram or the TikTok or whatever, the Snap Hat, whatever it is they do now with videos and the things.
Oh, shut the
I
fuck
don't
up.
Know what
you know what
called.
They're
you
called.
Don't
come
tell
on.
Me what I know. Oh,
yes,
fine.
You
it's,
do.
It's,
yes, you do.
TED Talk.
I'm serious.
TED Talk.
Hire someone. That's what I did. I started hiring people. I can't afford it. I was just like, okay, I'll give you a percentage, and then this other person, I have another person who's just like handles my fucking appointments and shit for me. I just one of my friends who's online and queer and needed a job and was really good at organizing shit. I'm like, hey, do you want to organize my shit? Because I have brain damage. And they're like, yeah. And that was it. And it's you know, good pay for them because they only have to work a few hours a month to keep me organized. And, you know, for Simon, he does my fulfillment for Etsy orders and stuff, which I cannot do. That's just too much executive function for me. And he gets a percentage, like everything that I sell. He gets a percentage of, so that just scales with the amount of work that he does.
Last weekend, I ran into
highly
one
recommend
of your prints
it.
In the wild at a friend's house. I walk in, and there it is on the mantle. One of the, help me out here, problem glyphs. Thank you, problem glyphs. Yes. I want you to make more tank tops.
Which one was
nice
it?
The one that I had, I have worn to the point where you can't see the prints anymore.
Yeah, by the way, if those threadless prints don't hold up for you, contact their customer service and get them to send you a replacement because they usually will. Because they know
and you gave it to me
that those
free.
Digital prints are like, oh, okay. Okay, yeah. I haven't really looked at that shirt store in a while. I need to go and add more designs and stuff for sure. But I highly recommend that independent artists do some delegation, and it can just be like little tiny stuff, and it can totally be percentage of like somebody fulfilling your sales for you, or somebody like, hey, can I give you $20 and you spend 5 minutes and send me a spreadsheet, and it's going to take you just that amount of time to do it because I don't want to fucking do it, and I'll give you $25 every month or whatever. You can definitely make
like
it worth
everyone's
while. Something
that's very easy for them but very difficult for me.
Totally.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's all about finding, yeah.
And then because both of you are making more money, you as the quote unquote employer end up becoming more profitable, and then they get more work. It's that's the way to do it, I think. That's my dream. Like, the only reason I want to make more money at all is so I can give more of it to my friends, you know? Because that's kind of my experience on the internet right now, particularly right now, is everybody I know is fucking unemployed or sick or needs more work or whatever. And like, that's the only reason that I'm interested in making a profit at all is so that I can give that to people. The first person I see on Instagram who needs money, I send it to them, like, you know?
Like, you know, I just wish I knew. I wish there was an outlet or someone who existed where you could go to them and say, I have all of these skills, but I don't know where I fit in today's world in order to make a living wage. You know, if there's someone.
I wonder if there are organizations out there. That does feel like for artists specifically, that'd be rare.
For other jobs, right? They have headhunters. But for people like us, like, it's
yep.
not the same.
Recruitment.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something I think about a lot. And, you know, my own experience is not particularly applicable to a wider range so much. because the way that I did it was like weird. So I don't know. I don't really know what the answer is.
I mean, that does seem to be on the
artistic. I have something on this about artists. So this was kind of something that just happens online in certain circles. I can't disclose the circles that I'm aware of. But it's effectively just art coalitions that come together, typically to sell fandom items. And in one instance I've seen, it is a specific collection of artists. They're making your fan art. They're making your gay shit. And they also have backup writers who also write stories, and then some, and then you can either buy stories or fan art, or you can buy collaborations that are a specific flat rate, and you're buying a story with an illustration on top of it, and they just BOGO a ton of these. And I feel, and they actually headhunt for talent online for other people. So I feel like that's the closest I've seen of like a, it's kind of a, the artists have to care of themselves in that case. I mean, it's not someone you can go easily find.
It's still like independent group organizing at that level.
But at least there's a structure somewhere.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there does need to be like more organization. Because the granularity and the sort of alienation and individualization is what social networking and capital has been pushing. Because it's more profitable for them, but
right. Certainly, there are, you know, perhaps other people on Etsy that are like yourself, Lyric, that are makers that have kind of experienced the same issue with the site, and maybe ideally something could come up out of that as these sort of platforms come and go. I don't know. I had conversations about this last weekend.
A friend's birthday party where she's also a maker. She's a latex designer. And I was saying, I really just want someone to be in charge of me. And she's like, that is also what I want. Like, there's a bunch of us who are, we are doing this.
There's a market.
Like, we don't have partners. And everything you buy from us is made by our hands. Like, if you think that we're super cute and you want to own something that we touched a whole bunch, then anything we make, like, we're self.
I mean, You just kind of, that is why our show is called Working On It. It is primarily supposed to be featuring people that are working at that level, be it professionally or just otherwise.
You need a business manager.
All of us.
Get a business manager.
I mean, maybe something will come out of the woodwork. Because I was telling Jake before the show that I was recently a contestant on a game show. So who knows? Maybe my newfound friend. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lyric, am going to be on The Weakest Link.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
the new version?
See, that's the great thing about living in Los Angeles. That's I would rather be in LA cool. right now than Seattle, specifically for that reason.
I must agree. Yeah. Well, if you can just randomly get on The Weakest Link, that's a good,
I filled out the application when I was drunk, and then I didn't even finish it, and they called me. They're like, "Can you please finish filling out the?" Because they saw that I was a leather worker. And I think that they just thought that was going to be like a funny thing to talk to me about. So.
Right.
That's so funny. Yeah, I saw that show was
one
revived.
One season so far. And I am going to be on the second season.
Heck yes. You'll have to let us know when that airs. We can tweet out about it. We could say past guest Lyric Wilson is now on.
That's right.
Oh,
enemy of the show.
It was amusing. So we'll see. But yeah, when you're in Los Angeles, stuff like this just kind of happens if you're open to it.
I mean, LA is sort of horrible in a lot of ways, and people love to talk about how horrible it is, and it's like, you're right, I agree. But I also really love it because it is conscious of how horrible it is, and I think that is more self-awareness than the majority of cities in the United States. Like, there is an honesty to how sleazy it is, and I really appreciate that.
Everyone does shrug.
If you consider yourself like you have 50% self-confidence in any other city, like if you can go up in any other city to a stranger and say hello, you will do fantastic in LA. Everyone is afraid to say anything. So if you have no fear and you don't care what people think, you'll do great down here. Because you go out and you'll have 50 friends because they're like, oh my God, you're not afraid to talk to us. And it's just, it's very amusing. so.
Do you think people are self-conscious in LA because they're afraid of like embarrassing themselves?
Because in the Bay Area, like when I go out and talk to people, it's a very different feeling than when I talk to strangers in Los Angeles, because they are so mystified by the fact that a stranger is comfortable enough to talk to them, and immediately they just want to buy me drinks and pet me and think that I'm very, very fancy. And I'm like, all I'm doing is treating you like a human being. But all everyone's looking at themselves, I feel like, inward constantly, and is very afraid to kind of step out of the box. So when you do, you end up being the belle of the ball.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never hung out with any normal people in Los Angeles. It's always been like just weird artists that I knew from elsewhere. So I don't think I've had any experiences of, you know, kind of a more baseline Los Angeles social structure. So that's interesting
to
hear.
I've had that experience on the West Coast, just being someone who was raised in Georgia.
Yes.
Like, you just talk to people, you kind of make small talk if you're sitting next to each other or whatever. Like, I don't even instigate it most of the time, but the number of times I've made like a small comment and it's just spun into me talking to someone and they're like, wow, I never expected. I'm just like, no, we're going to say bye and then we're going to walk off. I was just being nice.
Again.
That's it. Like, yeah, it's fine. It's like,
God,
we're
Seattle
both killing time.
No, but it was
so weird.
No one gets that up here.
It was a game I used to play before the pandemic where I would have a plan, like, because I never invite people to go with me to concerts or anything, really. I'm terrible at that. It's the autistic thing where I don't think about friends being like, would you like to come with me to see this concert? No. I'm just always like, I'll make friends when I'm there. It's fine. You just look around. You're like, that person looks good. I'm going to go talk to them and then they're going to be my friend for about an hour.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell.
And it's fine.
You can tell just by looking at someone. You're like, oh.
That's right. Or like, I know them. They are of my tribe. It's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. That's pattern recognition.
And it's super
cute. We're at about an hour and a half, and we've had a lot of good chunky conversation. I just wanted to cut in here and ask Lyric if there's anything you wanted to plug for yourself or anything outside of Xenolux, which we have talked about a bit. Are there any other work you've been doing that you want to talk about?
In terms of work right now, I mean, mostly, you know, what I work on a personal level is just the Xenolux stuff. I recently participated in the headdress project with Five and Diamond in San Francisco, where once a year they do this art show where they get a bunch of people like me and other makers like me who do fashion brands to make just an artistic headdress. And I've been doing it since they started this event, which was back in like 2009, 10 or something like that. So for quite a while. And so the headdress is still for sale on fiveanddiamond.com. And there are still many bare leather pillows, which I am making. So it's mostly just leather, and there's nothing too particular that's a new project at this juncture in time.
No worries.
Are there any questions you forgot to ask or something like that?
Well, I don't have a question, but we were talking about the art modeling earlier. And then I got to drawing everyone here and did face portraits of
goodness.
All of you. So let's enjoy these really quick. And then we'll put those up for the podcast notes afterwards.
I knew you were drawing.
Except
for when
the cat
I could tell.
Was like on your shoulders, like clutching you for dear life.
Yeah, Rue was killing me for a good 20 minutes. But let's see, real quick, we got Jake here. Jake boy,
oh,
I
boy.
Captured your soul, but
oh,
I didn't capture what you look like very well.
Did you draw him with a boner?
That's really perfect.
It's good. It captures his essence.
More Jake essence.
That's a beautiful.
Oh, there's another Jake.
When I draw things, I can't actually finish the face. So you finish the head. Like the head shape doesn't exist, but I have features.
That's fine. That's an artistic choice.
That's fine.
There's a picture where you're like, I was dark. I found this one.
That's some sexual action.
You were on my Facebook.
So for Eliza, your camera froze. So I got you holding your hand up to your face.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. You got my weird.
Oh yeah.
Those are Eliza eyes.
Yeah, that's great.
And I kept trying it, and it was just super difficult to get something in on you, and I couldn't do it, and it just kept messing up. Yeah. Just whatever.
You want to get the little pug nose and like the squint.
This one's a little closer.
Yeah, and then like a really long upper lip.
Then I went and got a reference photo from you. From the
if you draw like the Xenolux a pet Tumblr, bird actually. From the Edwardian era, that's you'll just basically come up with Eliza.
Yeah, except the pet bird is mad about something.
And it was like Queen Victoria's mad pet bird. Then it just turns into Eliza.
Someone gave it Adderall.
I think you're wearing gloves from the Xenolux Etsy store.
With her, I know exactly like what pose that is too. When Eliza had long purple hair, which is funny because the night before we like bleached her hair and then it didn't work out. It turned orange and then she dyed it purple. Oh my goodness. I love how I look like Cruella DeVille in that drawing. Yes.
Yeah, that's the swoop.
Then I went to get a picture just so something kind of satisfying.
That is very excellent.
And then I found one of these as well.
I'm not even wearing that. That's amazing. That's somewhere. Oh, it's right here.
That rules.
Did you draw yourself?
I think it's really cool.
Oh, that is
no,
cool.
I don't have any memes.
What the fuck?
It comes and goes. I'll draw some and add them to the comments.
Okay,
enjoy
thanks.
That later.
Yeah, I'm gonna make you scan all
wait,
those.
I don't
by
actually
the way.
Know.
We will
yeah.
sell
the
them.
Other people
actually.
In this chat do
go for auction
as like independent maker work.
So,
yeah, Jake.
Yeah, Jake. What's up?
I do.
What's up, Jake?
Shack shit. I produce
and this
podcast.
Makes you money?
That's what I do. No. Currently, I'm unemployed. Previously, money. I was half in charge of customer service for a startup. After getting unemployed, I'm still on that government money, and I'm
nice.
Back in school. So figuring the rest of it out from there. I've started my first semester, and I've paid for it. And the rest, we're going to get to that.
Maybe Jake can be your manager.
Listen, I might be needing a job at some point in the future.
This dude
can
organize
shit.
He keeps us. He keeps us fucking organized.
Eliza.
Give him 10%.
We give him 10%, and he can be in charge of all of my dating apps and like message like hot bitches for me. That would be really helpful. Okay,
I have to do that for myself right now.
It'd be really great if you could just like do that for me.
Hmm.
Hey.
Maybe this is a money making opportunity.
Yeah, Jake, are you good at talking to women?
Just copy and paste all your messages. Have the same conversations twice.
I think Jake would be good on dating apps. Actually, he's
Jake. Everyone you bounce off of, literally, is guaranteed to get a bullseye.
He's funny. He's personable. He's very good at like threading a conversation that's about to fall apart. Like he's always
I'm a needle threader.
Sense of coming in and making sure that the plates stay spinning. He's very good at
that. I like to do this. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I like to do these things.
Yeah. I notice. I don't want you to think that nobody's noticing what you do, because I notice.
God bless. Yeah, I'm remiss to admit that I do any work for this podcast, but I actually do a bit of work for this podcast.
He does. He does do a bit of work. He handles all the computer stuff and uploading and...
And yeah, so essentially, though, to answer the lyric question more directly... I started helping this out. Michelle wanted me, who's not here, by the way, but Michelle is an independent writer. That's her trade. That's her artistry. And she wanted me to start a podcast, mostly because me, her, and Ruben, we get to talking like this in our little voice chats all the time. We just have these big conversations, usually based around art or something, you know, within that realm. And we roped Eliza into it because she knows more people than all of us and is cooler than all of us.
I have 20,000 followers on Twitter, and they were like, yeah, we could use that audience. Get her on. That's fine.
Michelle,
I know
Michelle
here.
Came to me one day and was like, do we want Eliza on the podcast? And I'm like, well, sure. Does she want to be? And then we figured it out. I was like,
well,
yeah.
Michelle and I collab. I mean, Michelle and I started our forum together, Pro Click Zone. I mean, I'm pretty much the only one running it now, but that was our idea. So,
oh, I didn't know that she was like a co-founder.
Oh yeah,
okay.
she's the other admin.
And what about Ruben?
But
over there,
Ruben
is a fine
because...
artist, as you can tell.
Ruben does the most DIY shit out of all of us that's like practical.
He's
employed by a company, but he does like woodworking. This MF is making his own food all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Every time I talk to Ruben, he's on some new learning process.
Practical skills.
Practical skills. Yeah. So that's he's kind of our practical skills guy.
Yeah.
Bit of photography. All right. I got it. I got two pictures of me.
Oh, sick. Let's see it.
First one.
Hey.
Pretty good.
That's good. I like it.
Sure. I can't keep doing this.
Oh, no.
He's running out of paper.
See?
It's just spectacular. I want to go.
I like those.
I would go to this gallery.
Those were good.
Show.
I would, actually. I really. Now, I think after a lifetime of being an artist and looking at other people's drawings, I'm so sick of people who can draw. I want to see people who, like, have fresh approaches to art, you know.
It's all about anti-skill.
It is. I want the naive art. I want the
Hell yeah, the
pure stuff. I don't want any art that has been to a school or seen a painting.
I've never seen a painting in my fucking life.
Better not.
It's like the virtuoso guitar guy versus the guy just playing a cool riff over and over and over again. I just want the cool riff over and over again.
I do. I want
like,
the cool riff.
Hit me over the head with a hammer.
I will not watch professional dance performances because they just bore the shit out of me. I will watch someone who can only like half dance for hours. I'll do it. Watch them at the club. I love YouTube videos where people are just like, I can't dance, but
there
here we go.
There were a couple at the clubs that we used to go to in San Francisco who were exactly that. There was that one guy who just did this one move and he was spun around in a circle and sprayed his sweat on everyone and we called him the sprinkler and he was just the most spectacular human you've ever seen. I mean,
yeah.
Also,
that's pure joy.
The other weekend, my uncles were like, we're going bowling. Would you like to come with us? And I'm like, sure, why not? I think they thought I was no threat. And then I wound up beating them both twice. But there was a bar in the bowling alley where they were doing like an open mic night. This woman did this cute guitar thing. But then there was like some comedy. And this guy got up in between the comedians. And I think in his brain, he thought he was doing comedy. But all he did was talk about his horrible childhood and how his parents were like dead. And how he was so upset. But it was so odd that he went back around and then became brilliant performance art. And like, I want to subscribe to this man who was just making, he's like, within 2 minutes, he was able to make 40 people feel unbelievably uncomfortable, but not by saying anything really horrible or racist. So I thought that was really impressive. And
that's the real shit. I went to an open mic. Go ahead.
And that was the really good part because we could tell that he thought, he was like,
that probably is essential to it. Yeah.
There was no punchline. And it was amazing. But anyway, Eliza, go.
I mean, I find that very relatable because that's funny to me. Like, hey, this horrible thing happened to me and I'm laughing. And the other person is like, that's
absolutely
awful that happened to you. I'm so sorry.
But there was
I'm like,
no,
what are you talking about?
He was just telling the story. Like, it was like, and then my mother died. And then, you know, this morning I drank some really strange milk. And also when I was a kid, some people laughed at me and I'm like, this is the most brilliant thing I have ever seen. This is ghost world level of fabulousness. Daniel Close is like somewhere in the audience being like, I'm gonna make a comic about this.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
That's the good shit.
But I do miss these things.
Well, I was going to say, we could, as Desus says on Desus and Mara, we could chop it up all day with you. But we're coming up on 2 hours. I think we've got a pretty great episode in the can. And without Michelle, I mean, we usually break 2 hours with Michelle. I'll put it that way. And it's, we love Michelle.
We do love Michelle.
She is responsible for a good 60% of the audio content of this show most of the time.
She truly talks so much.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
This will be a very interesting. Listeners, please let us know how our first Michelle-less episode has gone. This is a unique one. We might not get too many more of these.
Yeah, I mean, we did our best, but definitely there was
some... If you want more without Michelle, if you want this booze-addled fucking stoner, just shut the fuck up. Let us know. Get that motherfucker out of here. We will reduce Michelle by 33% today. I guarantee you. Let me know. One person says it. I guarantee you 30% less.
This is very characteristic of Ruben. Lyric, this is all we do. We love Michelle here at this show at Working On It.
We do,
but she hasn't contacted me throughout this whole episode, and so Michelle, I hope you're doing well.
I hope she's okay. I hope
you set the time for today.
Okay.
You set this meeting and didn't make it.
If it turns out she's dead, it's gonna be egg on our face.
Better be dead, not dying. We'll still get yelled at if dying.
She was fucking awake earlier today. I think she had a shift. I think she just forgot to tell us and probably is too busy to do so right now.
That's completely valid. That's totally valid.
Absolutely.